The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition today. Spain, big week for Bilbao and people who think Dos Acero is a dangerous scoreline. France, does Messi buy his own baguette? Netherlands, PSV Ajax in de topper. Italy, meet the Spezia ones, and is Balotelli back? Plus, you won't believe who's in our hot transfer talk. It's the Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. That's right, listener. Dear listener, lovely to have you with us again. We're currently recording this Monday, kind of late-ish Monday, 24th of January. Hope it finds you well. We've got James Horncastle here, Julien Laurens as well, Alvaro Romeo's on board.
Hello.
Hi, guys. Got Jordi Amali, who's on the way a little bit later on to tell us about the Eredivisie. Boom, so much to talk about. Big games all over the continent. And, of course, that hot transfer talk. My word, woof. Does anyone actually have any at all?
Wow. We can find so hot, this podcast will come with a parental warning.
Woof. All right. Well, there's not long to go in that transfer window. And you won't believe the moves that some of these clubs have got in store. Craziness. But let's begin with some moments of the weekend in association with Paddy Power. Alvaro, boom, you're on.
Well, two moments of the week for me.
What?
One of them is Francisco Gento in honor of Santiago Bernabeu.
And yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, that was very nice. And let's don't forget that no one has ever won so many European Cups. So, you know, it was a beautiful tribute to Francisco Gento, the former La Galerna del Cantábrico, as they call him. And the second one, it's a different one, and it happened in women's football in the Super Cup final between Atlético de Madrid and Barcelona. A player from Atlético, Virginia Torrecilla, who suffered from a brain tumor, came onto the pitch after years fighting with the disease, and even Barcelona players went after the game to her just to salute her and just to celebrate that he was back in football.
Alvaro, those are lovely moments of the weekend. Jules, what have you got?
I've got the Derby du Rhône, the Rhône Derby, the 124th Rhône Derby between Lyon and Saint-Étienne on Friday night, and it was one of the worst in history. It was really, really, really, really bad. The fact as well that there was no fans, hardly not any fans. And Lyon won 1-0, but it was really one to forget, which is a real shame. But it's one really bad team, Saint-Etienne. Okay. One team with a lot of good players, Lyon, but a bad manager, Peter Bosch. Yep. And that's how we got here.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
No, not at all. It was the highest scoring weekend of the season in Liga.
35 goals.
Yeah. All right. We'll hear about some of those highlights later on. But James Horncastle, what stood out for you?
The pitch at San Siro.
Well, Jules was just saying that the Derby du Rhône was a terrible game. Well, so was Juventus Milan. Sub-zero was one of the headlines in the Italian papers today. So that's not my moment of the week. Absolutely not. I'm trying to think which is, though.
Lorenzo Insigne, pointing to his Insigne of the club that he's busy walking out on.
Yeah, shouting down the camera, I love you. I will always love you. His Whitney Houston impression before he bids them farewell to go to Toronto in the summer. So a real great show of love from Lorenzo there.
I should mention that he just scored a penalty in a 4-1 win over Salernitana, which had moved him level with Diego Armando Maradona in the all-time Napoli scoring charts. Although I always have a bit of an issue when they say this person's gone past Maradona and the scoring charts or gone level with. He didn't play there that long. That's not what, you know, his goal-scoring tally at Napoli wasn't the important thing in a sense. But anyway. Was there something else for your moments of the weekend?
I suppose Thomas Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Nice pronunciation.
Who has now scored more goals than Thierry Henry in Serie A.
And Amandine Henry.
Yeah.
All the Henrys, almost. Maybe.
All right, well, how are we going to fit all of that into one bumper totally show? I don't know. But I can't wait to hear more about those stories. Let's begin in sunny Spain.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
Palacio le da salida, la pone Vini, buen balón arriba Militao, y gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, y gol.
Qué brinco ha pegado.
Militao, el segundo, es el empate. Marca el Madrid, marca Militao.
Álvaro, a remarkable weekend in La Liga, in which Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Sevilla all went 2 goals down and all three of them fought back. My word, most dramatic was Real Madrid 2-0 down at home to Elche with just 8 minutes left and they pulled it back. How did they do it, Álvaro?
I knew that it was going to happen because Real Madrid always has an extra gear. And Elche did a very good game at Santiago Bernabeu this time. I think that with the new manager, Elche, they are finding ways of attacking that they didn't have under Almirón, but Jaime is doing quite well. And the goals of Elche were quite beautiful as well. I think that they didn't dominate Real Madrid at all, not at all. That would be lying because Real Madrid had chances in the first half. Even Karim Benzema missed the penalty. Karim Benzema was playing very well anyway, despite missing the penalty, and he had to leave the pitch injured, which is bad news for Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. But Elche, strangely, was the team that capitalized more at Santiago Bernabeu, something that doesn't happen normally. The first goal by Boye was beautiful after a great cross, and he hit the ball very well to beat Thibaut Courtois. Elche scored the second goal. There were 20 minutes remaining, and Real Madrid managed to come back. It was thanks to some sort of epic that Real Madrid always puts in place at Santiago Bernabeu. But also, I think that the quality of Real Madrid strikers and players finally imposed itself a little bit. For example, in the goal of Eder Militao, I think that Vinicius sent a fantastic cross from the left. And yes, Real Madrid got a point. I think that they wouldn't be too worried about this, or they shouldn't be too worried about this, sorry, because I think that still the teams that are chasing them, they are not particularly convincing. As you said before, Sevilla didn't manage to win either, despite being losing 2-0, they only managed to get a draw. And yeah, it was a warning for Real Madrid that if they slack off a little bit, or if they don't bring the best of themselves, they can have big problems. And it's also a warning of what Real Madrid is about these days. It's about the big days and the big moments. And you just have to see their list of games in La Liga. And they have lost this season 3 games. They lost against Sheriff, against Getafe, against Espanyol, and they have drawn 5 games, and they haven't drawn any high-profile game. They have drawn against Elche, Cádiz, Osasuna, Levante, and Villarreal, which is kind of a high-profile game, but Villarreal was doing very bad at the beginning of the season. But when it comes to playing against the top four, when it comes to knockout stages like the Champions League, the Super Cup, the Spanish Cup, Real Madrid is doing the job and they have beaten even the Italian champion twice this season. So that tells you that this Real Madrid is very good, but at the same time, when you know the game doesn't apparently on paper present a big challenge, maybe they switch off a little bit.
Perhaps so. We'll be hearing very shortly, Álvaro, about who they're going to be facing in their next cup knockout game. But in the meantime, as you say, even though they drop points, their lead remains unchanged at 4 points because Sevilla, who are in second place, also went 2-0 down, but also managed to come back at home to Celta Vigo to rescue a point there. Atletico Madrid also went 2-0 down. Truly is the most dangerous scoreline, 2-0. This was at home to Valencia. They came back to win. Extraordinary. They essentially did a Spurs at Leicester on Valencia.
Yeah, I think that what the Spurs did at Leicester was even more impressive because they did it within less time, and Atletico de Madrid, well, used a little bit more time for that. I'm not too sure. Anyway, I think that it was still very impressive. And the first half of Atletico de Madrid was terrible. Terrible to the point that you went into social media and for the first time you could feel that there was like a proper anger with Simeone, with something that we haven't seen in the last 10 years. The truth is that Atletico defensively was as bad as usually in the first half. Then in attack they didn't offer anything. Even in the second half, some attackers like Luis Suarez, they showed that they were too sloppy. But in the first half, Valencia was better than Atletico de Madrid, and you got the goals from Musa and Hugo Duro, two young players that I think that they are going to be important in La Liga football. And in the second half, I think that a combination of things happened. To start with, Valencia has a short squad, many young players, and also Alderete picked an injury. The goalkeeper, Jaume Domènech, didn't help either with a couple of mistakes. And Atletico managed to come back because, you know, they started pressing, they started just producing chances, not too many chances, but enough to send Valencia down in defense. And Cunha scored the first goal, Correa scored next to the, or close to the 90th minute, and then, well, Hermoso's goal, the 3-2, was probably the goal that Atletico de Madrid needed more, because in the last 2 months, Atletico has been dreadful. So this is a victory that probably doesn't mean a turning point for Atletico de Madrid, because emotionally this is a very important win for them, but many mistakes and repeated themselves at Wanda Metropolitano, but well, puts them in the right place to keep on fighting for the Champions League spot.
Although they're going to be visiting Barcelona after the international break. Barcelona, who won 1-0 at Alavés, Frankie de Jong with the goal. They're set up by Ferran Torres, and Barcelona with a win there will move past Atletico Madrid and take their Champions League spot for the moment. Now, mention cup football, because let's move on to the Copa del Rey, which took place midweek, the latest round of action there. And it saw Barcelona defeated by their old friends, Athletic Club de Bilbao. Crikey, what a game this was, Alvaro.
It was lovely. It was probably the best ever performance by Iker Muniain, what we expected in Bilbao that Muniain could become. Crystallize all that against Barcelona the other day, because when he was playing for the academy, he was 16 years old. He was a ball carrier. He was somebody who never lost the ball, who was capable of dribbling past players, no matter how tall, how stronger than him they were. And he did all this against Barcelona. And the communion, the synergy between La Catedral and Athletic Club Bilbao, the team, was amazing on Thursday evening. And I think that it was a well-deserved win in the extra time. And Athletic beat Barcelona, as you said. That was a very big disappointment for Barcelona, because at the end of the day, they are the defending champions, or they were the defending champions in the competition. And Athletic went through. They will play against Real Madrid in the next round. Right. And for Barcelona, this game against Alaves was important, because it came at the back of two defeats, one against Real Madrid in the Super Cup, another one against Athletic Club Bilbao at San Mamés, high profile games in Spanish context, and they needed to beat Alaves. They didn't do a good job at all. I think that the first half that Barcelona played against against Alaves is one of the worst I've seen from Barcelona, even worse than Koeman levels sometimes. But yeah, they managed to win thanks to Frenkie de Jong after the Dutchman just, capitalized on an assist by Ferran Torres, who maybe he's not playing too well now at Barcelona, he's just arrived, but he's producing the numbers, as he has done for the Spanish national teams. He has given one assist, he has scored one goal, and yeah, Barcelona got three very important points.
Okay, he also scored in the 3-2 defeat by Athletic on Thursday night in the Copa del Rey. But what an opening goal by Iker Muniain there. As you say, Athletic now will face Real Madrid. It's quarterfinals, isn't it, next?
So, in the quarterfinals, yeah.
Which is going to be huge, because, of course, it was Real who beat Athletic in the Super Cup final away there in Saudi Arabia last time out. And if Athletic can get past that, if they can get their revenge on Carlo Ancelotti's side, they could be facing an All-Basque semi-final. Another All-Basque affair, because Real Sociedad are up against Betis on the other side of the draw. Crikey. What a week. Athletic have played Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid and Barcelona when they beat two of them. It's pretty good going, isn't it?
It's good. I think that the fact that we have lost many finals over the last years just blurs our judgment a little bit in Bilbao. The fact that we are reaching those finals is a good thing. The fact that we are fighting against the best teams in La Liga and in the Cup, and always putting a good fight, tells you that this club is in the right direction. Then the new youngsters, I think that they are going to establish themselves in the team. Nico Serrano, for example, one of the youngsters that I like the most, he scored against Rayo Vallecano this weekend, and Athletic got the winner thanks to him. But the most important thing, more even than the results or the numbers, is to recover that absolute joint spirit with the stands. I think that in the beginning of the season, for the last 6 or 7 months, Athletic Club Bilbao has been playing in a very blunt way, just producing great defensive numbers, but not being able to exude any entertaining football. And I think that
generally speaking, the season had been a little bit low-key. And this win against Barcelona, I think that is launching the season up again, in the sense that there is a new emotion, there is a new belief that this team can beat Real Madrid. Why not? It's not going to be easy. But if Real Madrid doesn't have Vinicius and Benzema available for this game, which is a possibility, well, it will be easier, obviously. And yes, I believe that overall, it's been good for Athletic Club Bilbao to beat a team like Barcelona in such a quality game, because that also sends out a message to the players. I mean, we can play and we can win playing nicely, which is something that Athletic Club Bilbao didn't believe at the beginning of the season. That's why they were so defensive.
All right, Alvaro. Let's have some red-hot transfer talk, which may or may not include Ousmane Dembele. I don't know. It's your transfer talk. Go for it.
Yeah, I think the Dembele thing is the most important thing here, and probably Jules will have an opinion about it as well. On Thursday, the Dembele case just became one of the hot things in Spanish media, because Barcelona's sporting director, Mateo Alemany, came out publicly into the media, and he said that Barcelona had done a number of offers for Dembélé, that the offers had been rejected by the player and his agents. And Mateo Alemany said that Barcelona understands
Mateo Alemany,
that...
money!
Mateo Alemany has money to save. And yeah, basically... He said Barcelona understands that the player doesn't want to continue playing for Barcelona, and that the club understands that the player doesn't show any commitment.
Right.
And Barcelona has told the agent that Dembélé has to leave the club immediately.
Get out.
Yeah, and on Sunday, in fact, Dembélé was not in the matchday squad as a consequence of this.
Right. Why is nobody interested in Dembélé? Any interest, any potential suitors for him?
I think the biggest thing is it's not his interest to leave now anyway. Even if Barca said, we finish your contract and you're free and you can go wherever you want, it's not in his interest now. It's much better to wait until the summer, and then he will have more offers, more time to decide. He will be able to do whatever he wants, which wouldn't be the same now. I don't think clubs right now are ready to move on for such a big contract, in the sense that there will be a lot to talk about: wages, commissions, signing on fees, etc. So for him, and I think there may be a belief in his camp that Barca can talk the way they want. He's already trained again with the first team. He had, so he says, like a stomach bug. That's why he was not involved in the weekend, or certainly didn't go training the day before the game. And I think they can potentially see him playing again before the end of the season. And certainly, I think there's more meetings planned between Alemany and Moussa Sissoko, his agent. So there's also a way maybe where this can all be resolved, even if now it looks impossible. I would not be surprised if eventually maybe he would certainly play again for them before the end of the season, and then maybe even find an agreement to stay for longer.
I think that in football sometimes we take as granted some things that happen, that if you extrapolate them to the work environment of an office or a normal company, they wouldn't make any sense. For example, why Dembélé suddenly is a castaway? He's ostracized from January 2022 if he signed until June 2022. We know that his contract is running out, the club wants to sign him, but when Dembélé signed, he signed until June 2022, not until January 2022, and this applies for every other player. There is like 6 months before the contract runs out, basically the clubs are acting punishing them. And I think that this is something that we take as granted in football. It happens in football, but it's not logical if you compare it with some other, you know, company environments.
All right. Fair point, Alvaro. Next up, we're off to France.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Attention, Icardi qui récupère le ballon dans la surface de réparation. Verratti, la frappe! Le but! Le poteau rentrant! C'est un événement! C'est Verratti qui ne marque pas souvent!
All right, Jules, highest scoring match here, the Ligue 1 season so far. 35 goals, oof. Four of them came from filthy old PSG. Four as well from Bordeaux. Bordeaux, who a week ago, listener, you're right, were losing 6-0 to Rennes. But now, 4-3 winners against Strasbourg. Crikey, that's quite a turnaround, Jules.
It is high flyer, Strasbourg as well. Fourth in the table, second best attack in the league, who still scored three. But really, when we didn't expect Bordeaux to be able to pull out this kind of performance, they only had three midfielders available because they've got loads of injuries. They've got players, as we mentioned last week, they've kicked out from the first team squad, like Koscielny or Otavio. And yet, Wong, who is maybe, with Adli, their most talented player, comes out with a hat-trick, some pretty good goals as well. They were 3-0 up, then it would 3-2 up. And then when we thought, okay, Strasbourg are going to come back and win this because it's Bordeaux, then they still managed to win 4-3. So pretty incredible for them. Still doesn't mean that Petkovic is going to stay for much longer. He's still very much about to get sacked every single day. But at least that win is a huge breath of fresh air for them because they were so low and things were so bad that at least a win is something a bit positive, you know.
Well, it's something very positive in their case. Mentioned that Paris Saint-Germain also scored four. That was against Reims.
Two goals from Marco Verratti, which L'Equipe's front page this morning is Marco van Basten, of course, which I absolutely love.
That was the headline, Marco van Basten.
Yeah. I think he's genius. I absolutely love it. I mean, before Sunday night, Marco Verratti has only scored 9 goals in 364 games for PSG, and now he scored two. He'd never scored two in the same game.
Right.
So, yeah, the front page of L'Equipe is, it was Marco van Basten underneath.
Right. Which van Basten, famously, the only other player to have scored two goals in a game before, so I can see the
comparison. At least, you know, Marco, you know, it's great. Right. And Sergio Ramos scored finally his first goal for the club as well. Finally, he scored
Sergio Ramos
from Real Madrid.
If I was Sergio Ramos, I just scored my first goal for Paris Saint-Germain, I'd be upset that I didn't get the coupé.
What could it be? Sergio, it was Sergio Aguero.
Sergio Aguero, that would have been the headline.
Not bad. Yeah. Still not as good as Marco van Basten.
Jules, does this make you change your mind about Pochettino now? Because, I mean, if you can make Marco Verratti score two goals in a single game, surely he's some kind of genius, no?
Well, maybe. I mean, the first shot, the second goal, I don't think has still been decided if it was him because there's a double deflection on the strike. The first one is definitely Marco's. I thought the Sunday night game against Reims, especially once PSG were well in control, and to be fair, it was never in doubt that they would win and quite heavily. Although the first half was decent from a very young Reims team with a lot of really, really young talented players. Play the kids, Poch. Come on. We've got really talented kids in the under-19 teams.
Paris, born and bred.
Some of them are like Edouard Michu, some others like Xavi Simons, not so much, but still they count. Why not playing them? You keep playing like Herrera and Danilo and old Draxler, all that. Those rubbish players, that nonsense, where my, you know, Titi Parisien, the young Parisian boys, are there waiting on the bench. Come on.
Right. Paris Saint-Germain just won 4-0 on Sunday night, but Jules is still having a rant about Pochettino. Sorry, Alvaro.
No, Messi came back as well.
Yeah, it was about time, man.
How was he?
The 24th of January, man. What do you expect? Like, how long does his holidays last? You know, the last time I think he plays was 12th of December. No, I'm kidding. As we know, he had COVID partying in Argentina, and now he's back. We've had the club has been briefing a little bit on how Messi is in real life in Paris. Really, really simple guy. Very respectful and happy and jovial and all of that, saying hello to everybody when he arrives at the training ground in the morning. Nice. Not going out too much in his neighborhood, you know, in his area code in Neuilly-sur-Seine. That's where he lives. That's where they're renting the huge house that they have. No swimming pool, unlike the one he has in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Not a big garden either. And not, mm-hmm. you know, in Barcelona, in his garden, he's got like a beach with a football goals where he can...
Castelldefels, yeah.
Yeah, Castelldefels. Not so much in Paris.
Barcelona is a much nicer place than Paris. It's not. It's a much nicer place than
Paris. You know you're lying. It's not.
George, when the club are briefing like this, how do they do it? Do they kind of reach out? Do they send you as a kind of favoured, as a journalist influencer, do they kind of reach out and say, why don't you write something like...
No, because this is the kind of stuff that we've been, you know, we wanted to write, we've been asking. Not just me, but L'Équipe, Le Parisien newspaper as well. I think it's something that people like. Where does he live? What does he do? Where does he eat? Where do they go out? You know, the kids are playing for the...
Does he have a swimming pool?
Does he have a swimming pool? You know, where is the dog? The dog's there, but it's a smaller garden for the dog. You know, he's got a huge dog. It's a smaller garden. He doesn't go and buy his his baguette at the boulangerie. No piscine. So, you know, all of that things it matters, I think, you know.
All right. Do you know who's had the most shots so far this... Who's attempted the most shots so far this season at Paris Saint-Germain?
I would say...
Kylian Mbappé. Bit of a hint in the man we've just been talking about. It's Leo Messi.
Leo Messi.
He scored one goal. One goal.
I know, which means that Marco... The big joke is that Marco Verratti has now scored more goals than Lionel Messi in the season, which is crazy when you think about it. He does other things, though.
He does other things. He doesn't go and get his own baguette, so what does he do?
Yeah. He stays at home a lot. Right.
Is he being criticised, Jules? Like, for example, Cristiano, like at United, over the last few weeks has been criticised for, you know, holding back the team, acting petulantly when he's been substituted. United aren't in title contention. People thought they might be because they signed him. Obviously, PSG are top of the table and will reclaim the title after losing it last year. But has there been any criticism of Messi's performances, his goal record?
Not so much. Mostly because in the Champions League, as you all know, because of the goal show, he's doing great, much better. There's a few... He should have had more goals. I mean, he hit the crossbar four or five times, or the woodwork four or five times already. There's a few... I think his expected assists is much, much higher than the ones that he's had because... When you pass the ball to Danilo and Herrera and Draxler, what do you expect? So the thing that the French have been doing quite well, I think, is like instead of just criticizing him, they go like, oh yeah, you know, he used to be so quick on the first 5 yards, especially just after a dribble. Not so much. I mean, he's 34 and you could see he's not as quick as he used to be. So it was just like, it's little hints to say like, listen, he's not the Messi of 10 years ago in the greatest team ever, a club level certainly. And again, especially with the manager that he has now and the teammates around him, but he's still Messi and we obviously love him and all of that, you know.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of Cristiano in Italy, where on the one hand, before people criticised, it was, we should be so grateful that a player like Cristiano is playing in Serie A. This is just amazing. Whatever he does, it's fine, okay? And then when he didn't score goals, it was like, see? Serie A is hard. It is competitive.
It's exactly the same. And now, because Messi's people are saying, oh, it's really physical. It's more physical than we thought it would be. So now we're saying, you see, look, Liga is tough, man. It's tough. You know, best league in the world by far.
And some games go overlooked. For example, against Lorient, he was fantastic before Christmas. Do you remember, Jules? I think that he was playing very well.
Pushing a bit for Feliz Navidad, but you know, he was good. I think there are a lot of games that he was really good, but because there was no goals and assists, I think maybe people, you know, were a bit judging him a bit too harsh, maybe. But I think he's had... You could see, of course, he's not the same player than 10 years ago, and again, it's not the same team around him. But when him and Kylian link up, there's been great moments, to be fair, when he's been on the pitch.
All right, so you did get the memo from PSG then, good.
Excellent. Always, you know, right. Family.
Okay, excellent. Oh, have you got any hot transfer talk for us, Jules?
I've got a really, really hot super one. Yes. Ronaldo, the Lille left-back that no one knows apart from his mum and dad, is going to sign for Atletico Madrid.
Right.
They were hoping to get him in now.
Right.
Lille are not so keen, so he will go at the end of the season as a free transfer, as a free agent to Atleti, which I think is a really good... left back, young and hardworking. He will learn a lot with Simone. He's quite tough as well. He's good on the ball. I think it's a really, really good pick from Atletico, I have to say.
Okay. Atletico Madrid, who've recently lost an attacking fullback in the shape of Kieran Trippier.
They haven't had a very convincing left back since Felipe Luis, I would say.
Okay.
Really. Renan Lodi hasn't reached expectations.
Okay. What about this Jesse Lingard to Nice story, Jules?
The thing about Nice is that they want a wide player, and maybe Lingard, because of the British ownership and all of that, it's not really the type of guy they usually go for. They go much younger. They've got a much younger policy. Someone like Brian Hill, for example, at Spurs, who doesn't play much. We saw him only getting a few minutes at the end of the Chelsea game on Sunday. As someone that they already had identified before when he was in Spain, at Sevilla, on loan, obviously, at Getafe was Alvaro, wasn't it? But now that he's not playing...
Brian Hill?
Yeah.
Eibar.
I think Nice are like saying, hey, you know what, if he wants to play a bit, we would happily have him, and I think he would be great in France, to be fair. So I think it's more someone like that, in that kind of profile, than a Jesse Lingard. But again, maybe Jesse is a possibility as well.
Okay, excellent. Next up, we'll check in on the Bundesliga and then across the border to the Eredivisie.
We all enjoy the sport we call the beautiful game.
But since I've retired, I've discovered an ugly, even darker side to the sport we love.
Join me as Jamie Redknapp investigates.
Thanks, Jamie. We'll take it from here. Join Jamie Redknapp for Jamie Investigates, the football mockumentary series, available to watch on Paddy Power's Twitter. This week, Jamie Investigates, half and half scarves.
Do you know the truth?
Paddy Power.
18+, begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Bundesliga this weekend, Bayern maintained their six-point lead. They beat Hertha Berlin 4-1. Hertha, who prior to the game had a visit from angry fans, irate at them losing the first leg of their Pokal derby with high-flying Union 3-2, second leg still to come, of course. Union, meantime, who we were talking about with Christoph Biermann last time out, have continued their excellent season by moving into the top four. They beat Borussia Mönchengladbach 2-1, while Dortmund won 3-2 at Hoffenheim. Hoffenheim, who were in fourth place, so Union have just leapfrogged them. That 3-2 win for Dortmund, by the way, featuring Erling Haaland's 56th goal for the club in 57 games, but he then went off injured. Meanwhile, across the border in the Netherlands, something big was happening. Let's find out what with ESPN's Jordi Amali.
Tadić en Blind, en dan loopt dit toch nog heel goed af voor Ajax. Kan dit wat worden? Berghuis geeft de bal naar Mazraoui met links. Schiet hem in de kruising. Oh, Mazraoui met links. Jaagt hem in de winkelhaken. Het is 1-2 voor Ajax. Oh, wat lekker van Nusayim Mazraoui.
Hi, Jordi. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem, James. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Very good. Now, we were looking at the Eredivisie and wondering how good PSV Eindhoven must be, this was prior to this weekend, if they were ahead of Ajax in the standings. Ajax, who everyone's been raving about as one of the best teams in Europe.
Well, we have to put that in the situation of Ajax, because they're a bit two-faced this season. You have the European side, who are you all watching in the Champions League, winning every game there is. And then there's the Ajax in the Eredivisie, and they have it really tough against the opponents that are really defensive mentally and closed. So it's really difficult for them to put on the same game plan that they have shown on the European level.
They met this weekend anyway, the top two, PSV and Ajax, in a game they called De Topper. Is that how that's pronounced? Jordi.
Yeah, it's a bit for the last couple of years, there's a much bigger importance in this game, but they have no name for it. You have, of course, the clash between Ajax and Feyenoord, they call it the Klassieker, but this one doesn't really have a name, and that's why they just call it the Topper, like the best two teams heading on to each other. It was for the second time in a row, and it has to do with the stands being empty. A little bit of a snooze fest, James, I have to be honest.
All right, yeah, not too much of a game for the neutrals, I guess. But it did feature a spectacular winner from Ajax to take them top of the table again.
Yes, of course, and I think that maybe the just look-wise, the second one was more spectacular, but the first one was really amazing too, because Brian Brobbey, the newly returned center forward, was already injured, but was still humping through the box when Dusan Tadic gave a cross, and he put it above three defenders of PSV while being injured. And after that goal, he immediately got changed by the coach, Erik ten Hag. So that was a special goal as well. And there was a nice equalizer about from Mario Götze, the German world champion. But with the last goal, it was the only talk of the town was the ball completely over the sidelines or not? Because before the goal went in, there was a dribble on the sideline from Daley Blind. And for the people who were watching through the television, everybody was certain that the ball was over the sidelines. But they didn't have a nice angle. So the VAR couldn't do anything because there was no picture to be sure that the ball was completely over the sidelines. So yeah, PSV was really mad at that. Roger Schmidt, the German coach of PSV, let him go a little bit against the fourth official, telling him to just give the cup to Ajax today. He didn't show his best side to the people.
Okay. There was little doubt about the way that Mazri finished the move, though. Absolutely lashed that in.
Yeah, there was no doubt at all.
I must admit, I'm going to hold my hands up and say I was shocked when I saw Mario Götze equalising. Only the fifth goal that Ajax have conceded in the Eredivisie this season, but it really had passed me by that he was at PSV. How did that move come about?
Yeah, they surprised everybody. I think it was now 1.5 season ago, and then when there was no talk at all about it, then there came a big German car. When the journalists who were watching if there was somebody on the last day signing or not, and then inside that car came Mario Götze, and he really enjoyed it in Eindhoven, so he extended his contract, and he's not the same as we know from Dortmund from back in the days, from his best days, but he's still for the Eredivisie, he's an amazing player.
Of course, it's tougher in the Eredivisie, more physical, more demanding than the
I don't think so. I think it has to do with the body of Mario Götze.
All right. Fair enough. All right, so Ajax have gone top then anyway. And is that it? Or do you think PSV have still got something to say in this title race?
Well, they're still in it. It's only 2 points. And it's, for Ajax, it's just, I think it's a really stressful job for Erik ten Hag to see them overachieve time and time again in the European games. And when they get VVV Venlo at home or Vitesse away, they just struggle to get a goal. So I think it's not over yet. But however, in the end, I think Ajax will end on top.
Do you think Ajax's focus might, when the Champions League returns, they've got Benfica coming up in the last 16. Do you think their focus will be more on that than it will be the Eredivisie?
The coach is a guy who will tell the players all week long that the focus should be on the Eredivisie because it's going really not so great in the competition. But the players themselves, and it shows with like the likes of Anthony and Berghuis, they show it just a lot more in Europe. It's just that way.
All right. Magnificent. Well, that game coming up in a couple of weeks' time, actually about 3 weeks' time. So, Yuri, we'll catch up with you before that and see how things are going before their clash with Benfica. But many thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Have a great show.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which will come in handy when Mikel Arteta finally bends the process altogether. Pre-match bet builders only get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4+ legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Other T's and C's apply, and please gamble responsibly.
Dumfries che va verso il fondo. Dumfries va a cercare il fondo. Il pallone centro, il colpo di testa rete, Dzeko! Ha segnato Dzeko a pochi secondi dal 90esimo, sbloccando una partita che sembrava stregata.
Serie A, round 23 of this season, sees Inter still top. Their lead is now 4 points, though, over Napoli, who have moved into second place ahead of Milan, who, as James was mentioning, had a pretty dull 0-0 draw Sunday night with Juventus. Juventus remained just outside the top four, a couple of points behind, I think a point behind Atalanta. That's all well and good, James. How about we just bin that and talk about Spezia instead? What do you think?
Yeah, Candy Spezia have, in the last, what, five games, the only teams that have done better than them are Inter and Juventus in terms of points, which is a bit of a surprise because Spezia have been down in the relegation battle, just hovering above the drop zone. But they've really pulled away. They beat Napoli before Christmas. They then beat Genoa in the Liguria derby, the first of a couple that they were to have. And then they
beat Milan
kind of got
on
a
Monday.
Bit lucky. Mm-hmm. They got lucky against against Milan, with Milan in stoppage time having what would have been a winning goal ruled out because the referee did decide not to play advantage, and then broke down in tears at full time and apologised to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who gave him a big hug, because when he disallowed that goal, Spezia went up the other end and got a winner of themselves. And then they beat Sampdoria this weekend, another one of their local rivals, and have moved all the way up into 14th.
14th so place.
Considering that Thiago Motta was under pressure before Christmas, and they were saying that Marco Giampaolo was going to come in and replace him. Well, Giampaolo actually came and replaced Roberto De Vesa at Sampdoria. It was his first game this weekend. He lost to Thiago Motta. And this is a Spezia side that is operating under a transfer ban at the moment, which they are fighting, but they can't do any business in January. So it seemed like they had more against them than, let's say, some of the newly promoted clubs and some of the other strugglers down the bottom. And instead, they've been stronger and bigger than the things that have than adversity. So yeah, we'll have to see how long it lasts.
All right, as you mentioned, the man who had been due to replace Thiago Motta, who I must admit I'm surprised I never had him down. You know, there are certain players you think, oh, they'll be a manager. Thiago Motta never had him down as being,
oh no, I disagree with you.
Oh really?
He was this like Pep Guardiola position, same style, same, okay, more vice. But apart from that, the brain, the intelligence, I always thought he would become. And wasn't he top of his year at Covigiano?
Covigiano.
Or second behind Pirlo or something like that?
And also when Inter really went off the rails, I mean, when they won the treble, they were already sort of, it was an aging team and that sort of thing. But the decline really accelerated when Thiago Motta went to Paris Saint-Germain in what, January of 2011, something like that.
It was good for a couple of years there.
Oh yeah, I mean, in Italy, from Genoa Inter, he was fantastic, and at PSG with Verratti and Matuidi.
PSG as well,
what a midfield.
Do you remember when he got hit in the face? He had his nose broken, didn't he? At half time in the tunnel.
We're talking PSG Marseille. No, wasn't it Brandão? Yeah.
Brandão broke his nose.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he ran up and broke his nose.
I didn't know if you meant in Italy Motta. That he had similar.
No,
let me double check, but I'm
PSG.
Sure it's Brandão, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Brutal scenes. Anyway, so there he was. He came in for the highly rated Italiano at the back in the summer. Spezia, and I think, as you say, James, many people would have thought they were almost the likeliest to go down. But instead, and they hadn't had the greatest of starts to the extent that the club wanted to get rid of him. Giampaolo didn't accept. So what was it? Giampaolo wouldn't accept the job. So Motta, they were forced to keep Motta on. Result is Motta's gone on a brilliant run. Giampaolo joins Sampdoria instead and gets beaten this weekend in the derby. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at precedents here, I mean, this feels oddly similar to what happened at Samp, where the owner was sort of in talks with Dejan Stankovic, and then the owner got arrested at those talks, and the then manager of Sampdoria got to stay on and won the derby, Roberto De Vesa, and won, I think, three or four games. And and then, you know, more recently has just been fired. But no, I mean, I think the club are happy with Thiago. I think the issue has been maybe some friction with some of the players.
And the sporting director as well, there was a talk of.
Although the sporting director was the one who hired him. Again, Riccardo Pacini, someone who in the past worked under Damian Cimoli at Spurs, was at Sampdoria, was their sporting director as well. I think the other thing with Spezia is that, you know, Italiano signed a new deal at the end of last season after keeping them up. And then, so he said, I'm committed, I'm staying. And that was great because we all think of him as one of the great up-and-coming coaches in Italian football. And then Gattuso and Fiorentina fell out before they'd even signed any contracts. And Fiorentina came and bought Italiano out of his contract. And that left Spezia not reeling, but they had to act very quickly. They hired Motta. Last year, they had tens of players on loan, loads of free transfers. So they acquired 23 players this summer. So a huge churn. So again, a lot of people were kind of wondering what you were going to get with Spezia this year. And what you've got is a team that's 1 point better off than it was last year, and it's in 14th in the table. So there you go.
Excellent. Spezia, who are just down the road, just down the Ligurian coastline from Genoa, where Sampdoria reside, as do Genoa, who also changed manager, we mentioned last week, with Andriy Shevchenko basically making way. And very interesting choice by Genoa for their new boss, a fellow called Alexander Blessin. Don't know, are you familiar, Alvaro, Julien, with Alexander Blessin? He was in Belgium.
Manager of the year last season.
There you go. Well,
yeah, he did really well. Not so much this year, but last season did really, really well. I mean, I think they sold a lot of his good players. Mm. But I think I watched that game for BT Sport. I was on the score on Saturday.
I have to be honest.
I would not have watched Genoa-Udinese on a normal Saturday afternoon. I mean, in the sense that there were other games more or less at the same time. But nice. I was really impressed the first hour, especially. I thought they played well with intensity. They should have been 2-0 up.
All right. James, you voluntarily.
Yeah, but that's his job, to be fair. You know,
wow. It is my job. But no, look, Genoa got taken over in October. And it's a complicated club to take over, given that they've been run by Preziosi, one of the most unpopular owners that there's been for some time in Serie A. And, you know, they decided to change the manager from the guy who always keeps Genoa up, Davide Ballardini, as a caretaker. Brought in Shevchenko before they'd appointed a sporting director. Sacked Shevchenko after 9 games. Sporting director finally gets to choose who he wants to bring in. And, you know, again, it's just like, how many disciples of Ralph Raniak are there? How many footballing sons has Ralph Raniak had? I mean, he's fathered more than anybody. I mean, you know, the sporting director worked under him at Hoffenheim. The Blessing worked under him at RB Leipzig. Basically, Blessing's a career as a footballer player at Stuttgart was cut short by a knee injury. I mean, it sounds like very Thomas Tuchel and Nagelsmann all over again. And then he got a call from Ralph, which changed everything. And so now you've got this alignment, I suppose, between sporting director and coach at Genoa. And as Jules said, they played actually very well, I thought. Same result as Shevchenko and Ballardini was getting. They're winless in 19 games, but much better, much improved performance.
Yeah, 20 games now, actually, 20 games. The Ralph Rangnick football family, always expanding, of course. Barely a week goes by without some young footballing mind getting sucked into that particular network. Look out, it could happen to you. All right, big result this weekend for Roma. They beat Empoli 4-2 away at the Castellani. A brace for Tammy Abraham. Why was that significant, James?
It was significant because first English player to score more than 10 goals in Serie A since a certain David Platt in 1991-1992. So congratulations to Platy, yes. Congratulations for Tammy for overtaking Platy. He's been scoring regularly. I mean, he was unlucky at the start of the season, hit the woodwork a lot, had some goals disallowed. I suppose he was still figuring out who his teammate, who his strike partner was going to be. Was it Shomurodov? Was it Zaniolo, who's finally hitting form again? Roma, since losing against Juventus when they were 3-1 up, kind of collapsing, have bounced back from that. You would have thought they would bounce back against teams like Cagliari, battling relegation. Empoli, 120 minutes in the Coppa Italia against Inter in midweek and without several key players. But Sergio Oliveira has been a very good signing for them, at least superficially, judging him on 2 games where he scored the winner against Cagliari from the penalty spot and was where he scored again this time and was involved in their first 2 goals. So, you know, good bit of loan signing from Thiago Pinto, Jose Mourinho and co. So we'll have to see whether Roma can keep gathering this momentum, but I think Champions League is still a bridge too far for them.
Well, we'll see. Of course, no league football in Serie A next weekend or anywhere in Europe because of the international break. Italy, Roberto Mancini, taking advantage of the pause to have a little mini training camp with the Azzurri because, of course, they have got a massive game on the horizon. The World Cup qualifier that they'll be having against North Macedonia. Mancini on Tuesday will be dropping a list of the players invited for this stage, about 35, 36 or so. And this is probably the most exciting thing of this entire show, listener. Who's in that list, we think?
Balotelli.
Super Mario.
Super Mario.
Super Mario Balotelli. Wow. He hasn't featured for Italy since Mancini's first two games back in 2018. Scored in one of them against mighty Saudi Arabia. Prior to that, he hadn't featured for Italy for 4 years. Mancini had brought him back in after the debacle in 2014. So it's quite a bold call, this one. As you're probably aware, listener, Balotelli is currently playing his football out on the kind of Turkish-Syrian border for Adana Demirspor. Have I said that right?
Demirspor.
Yeah. And he's doing all right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a bold call.
Brit Asambalonga with Gökhan İnler, Stambouli.
Yeah, a few fun boys.
It's Belhanda. So it's a real kind of... it's just peak Turkish Super League, I must say. It's
extraordinary, though.
He's got 9 goals, hasn't he? 9 goals in the league already for the first
already.
Half.
Already? Yeah. I mean, in about 23 goals. It's not exactly Erling Haaland, but...
anyway, it's the first half of the season. If he does as many, if he scores as many in the second half of the season, he's down to 18. It's pretty good in the league.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, okay, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, there are some bright young prospects going through. Italy having a bit of an issue in terms of converting chances. That's why they're in the World Cup qualifier in the first place. There are players who are coming through like Scamacca and Raspadori and some other names who could maybe do a job. But, I mean, it's a stage. It's not a match squad. So he's free to call up whoever he likes. There is also a lot of suggestion that João Pedro, the Brazilian at Cagliari, will be in that list as well.
João Pedro. Yeah, I mean, the most prolific Brazilian working in Europe's top five leagues over the last two seasons. Mm. He's scored more goals than Neymar, Roberto Firmino, and yet he's still playing for Cagliari down at the bottom of Serie A and still missing penalties, which is what he did, which is why he's exactly what Italy need, because that's what Jorginho did in the Switzerland games, and it's why they're in the World Cup playoffs. But that's me being facetious. João Pedro deserves an international call-up. I mean, what a get-together this is going to be at Coverciano. I mean, do you remember that get-together they had on Italian TV before the Euros, yeah, where they were playing sort of tennis with frying pans and they were having sing-alongs? I mean, this one, I mean, I'd get the cameras back into Coverciano for this and broadcast it out. Netflix special, one-off, boom.
Mm.
Let's have it.
All right. Italy, all or nothing. Excellent. Well, looking forward to hearing all the details on that. Let's finish off today, James, with some especially red-hot transfer talk. First off...
right, okay.
First off, are Aston Villa going to sign Rodrigo Bentancur?
They would like to. He was watched on Sunday night against AC Milan. He was one of Juventus' better performers. But look... there are problems about getting this deal done. It's not Juventus' intention to sell the player, and that's fairly significant. Were they to sell the player, it would have to be for a very big price because he's got a 50% sell-on clause to Boca Juniors in his contract, and whilst Juventus has been kind of negotiating to chip away at that, the buyout percentage still has to get to a sufficiently low point whereby it makes doing a deal worthwhile. And then the other thing to consider is that of all the midfield players that Max Allegri likes at Juventus, right, and as of all the Juventus fans who say, you know, we need ball players, creators, skillful players, where do you think Bentancur ranks? He's very much on the Allegri kind of, we don't care if he can pass the ball. Can he run? Can he tackle? Can he press? That's the kind of midfielder I want in my... Artur, he can go to Arsenal, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Allegri, of course, didn't say that. But I would say there are some significant barriers to this transfer happening at what is already a very late juncture. But never say never, James.
Anything else transfer-wise?
Yeah, only one. I didn't say that when we were talking about Eredivisie, but Nico Tagliafico is not far from leaving Ajax, and Barcelona is one of the most interested clubs in getting him.
Very good.
Yeah. His name is great translation in Italian, James, is it?
What? Cut the
cuts
fig.
Cuts figs. Cut the fig.
Yep. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Taglia la tela. Cut the net. Cut the veil. Yeah. Yeah, some great surnames in Italy. Anyway. So that's it for today's Totally Football Show European edition. And it's been a sizzler. We won't be here next Tuesday because the leagues are all having the weekend off. But there's the regular Monday show, of course. Keeping you up to date with everything you need to know. And we'll be back with Alvaro, James and Julien in a fortnight's time. Many, many thanks, guys, for today. Many thanks to you, listener, for being with us. Producer Charlie for putting it all together. From all of us here, until next time, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.